song got me charged up. That was that was great. You see our picture of the church up here? I don't know if y'all have seen that before, but the rainbow over at somebody. I think, Glenda, you got somebody to erase the telephone lines out of it. So. Who did it? Leona did it. Okay. Okay. Same thing. You still get credit for it. But that's really good because I remember seeing the original picture. And I thought, that's such a nice picture. If it only didn't have those telephone lines in it. And you took care of that. We left off last week in Psalm 2. I'm going to finish up. There's a couple of verses left. I think we're on Psalm 2, verse 8. So we'll finish that up, and then I think we're going to hit 3 and 4 today. Psalm 2, verse 8. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage and the ends of the earth your possessions. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Trivia question. I mean, we know David wrote the psalm. Trivia question is, who's he talking to? Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage. It's kind of a trick question. Because David, while he wrote it, this is not David speaking. David is prophesying. So the speaker is God the Father. So then when I ask the question, who's he talking to, it makes a little more sense. He's talking to Jesus in Psalm 2. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Again, we see here, as we saw last time, this is something that's going to happen in the future. This has not happened yet. When Jesus returns and rules from Jerusalem, he's going to basically do two things. First, he's going to dispense justice to those who have rejected. And second, he's going to create a kingdom that will last for 1,000 years, a kingdom of righteousness where he's going to rule for 1,000 years. And I can't wait for that time. That's going to be such an exciting time. Wouldn't you like to hear on the news every night, when you listen to the news, if there is some sort of, let's say, a crime committed, wouldn't you like to hear on the news that the criminal had, during the same day, had already been caught and already been punished, and it had already been taken care of? We never hear things like that. But that's going to happen all of the time, because there's not going to be any sin that won't be dealt with and won't be dealt with immediately during this 1,000-year rule and reign. And that's only going to be about 1% of the news. The other 99% is going to be good news. There's going to be all sorts of things that are we're going to hear on the news. Why is it going to be good? Because the Lord is going to be in control. He's going to rule and reign. He's going to have eliminated basically all the wicked people from the face of the earth. So it's going to be for those that love the Lord. So we're going to witness that. Yes, we're going to rule and reign with Christ. So we're actually going to be involved in dispensing justice, so to speak. Now, you might ask yourself, if all the evil people will be dealt with, why will there be any crime at all? Why will there be anything bad happening at all? And there's an answer to that question. Way back in the Garden of Eden, before the fall, man did not have a sinful nature. Adam and Eve did not have a sinful nature. But there was the presence in the garden of Satan. And Satan took advantage of the vulnerability of Adam and Eve and induced them into sin. And then from that time on, we've had two things in the world that have caused problems. We've had a sinful nature that was passed on to us from Adam and Eve, and we've had Satan. Now, in the 1,000-year rule and reign of Jesus Christ, Satan is going to be eliminated for almost the entire 1,000 years. He's going to be let loose in the very end.
For a short period of time. that's why it's going to be generally a really good
situation, a good place to be, very little sin. But there will be sin. Why?
Because even then, we'll still have a
sinful nature, just like we have right now. So there are times when we will sin, having nothing to do with Satan trying to influence us at all.
It's just our nature, a sinful nature. But it won't be near as bad as it is now, because Satan will be bound and will not be able to be involved in that process. So, sadly, there will still be some lawbreakers. They'll be few in number, though, and our job will be to keep a close eye on them, and we'll deal with them as these things happen. Now, let's go to verse 4. Let's go to verse 10. Here in verse 10, we see the Holy Spirit involved in this psalm. And let me back up. Back in verse 4, God the Father was involved. It said that God laughed at his enemies. And then in verse 9, we see that Jesus rules. We just read about that. So we got God laughing and Jesus ruling, and now we have the Holy Spirit involved, and he's warning in verse 10. So he's warning. He says, "Now therefore, O kings, be wise and be warned, O rulers of the earth." So he's talking basically to the same people that we started this psalm out in verse 1, which was the rulers of the world. He says, "Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish in the way, for his wrath is quickly kindled." That verse might be strike something in your memory recently that we saw in the Chosen episode. You remember where Nicodemus was talking to Jesus, and he bowed down at some point when he realized who he was talking to. And Jesus said, why are you bowing down? And he quoted this verse. He said, "Kiss the Son, lest he be angry, and you perish in the way." And that was an appropriate thing to show on the movie, or the episode, because the word kiss is the same word used for worship. So Nicodemus was a leader, but he took the right position, that of worshiping Jesus. And it goes on to say, "Blessed are all who take refuge." This is just a word of encouragement to all of us, that we may be, at this point in time, we may appear to be the underdogs, we may have a lot of things going against us, we may have the tide of popular culture and even our government going against us, but God says, "Blessed are those who take refuge in him." And someday all these wrongs that we and our fellow brothers and sister Christians in the world are suffering from, they're going to be righted. And Until then, we just have to hang in there. Now, that's the end of Psalm 2. Now, this is a good place for you to take some notes in your little booklets about the next few psalms that come up. Psalms 3 through 14 are all written by David, and they have a pattern. And you can't see the pattern unless you stand back and look at them from a little bit from a distance. But it's basically 10 prayers by David. They're divided into two groups. The groups are Psalms 3 through 7 is one group. That's five psalms. And then 9 through 13 is the other group. That's five psalms. Now, after each of these groups of five prayers, and these are, you don't see this in English, but in Hebrew, there's 64 Hebrew poetic lines. So these are well thought out psalms. These are planned ahead. David is a poet, and he takes the time to organize these into these groups. So you have these two different groups of five. And then there's, in between them, there's Psalm 8. And then at the end of that, end of the 13, there's Psalm 14. Now what do those two psalms do? They characterize the human condition. That's what Psalms 8 and 14 are. But there's a difference between these two groups. So you have a group of five, and then a characterization. Another group of five, and then a characterization. There's a sharp contrast, and you'll see it as we go through these psalms, but you wouldn't probably pick it up unless you were looking for it. And here's the two depictions or of characterizations of mankind. The first characterization, Psalms 3 through 7, is basically David talking about the good side of man, that he's made a little bit lower than the angels. He speaks to the attributes that man has, the qualities. He also speaks about, even though he's saying basically man has a good side and it's something to be proud of, he also is saying that we get into trouble. We have problems, just like Gary sang the song. Psalm 3 was David. He was in trouble from his son Saul, Absalom. But even though we go through trouble, God is going to deliver us. He's going to take care of us. He's going to encourage us. So through these first five psalms, Psalm 3 through 7, we see that God's guaranteed protection of the righteous man. David appeals to the better instincts of man, encourages men to do the right thing, instructs men that God is pure and he will not tolerate sin. Even in Psalm 6, we're going to see that David is physically sick at the time he writes it, but yet he has hope that God will not let him down. Psalm 7 was another psalm where David was being persecuted, this time not by his, chased by his son, but this time persecuted by King Saul or one of King Saul's generals. So you see in these, and we'll go through the psalms, but I want you to see it from a little higher up first to see where we're going to be going. David is going to talk about the better instincts of man. In Psalm 8, kind of a combination of all the psalms before, he talks about the glory of man made a little bit lower than the angels. So this whole section speaks about man's high dignity. Psalm 9-14 is entirely different. There, David will talk about the depths and the depravity of man, the problems that we have as man. And how disgraceful we are. Now that you see that is going to be coming up, let's get into Psalm 3 and 4. And knowing that we're going to be talking about the glory of man and the protection of God, that's where we're going. And this is the psalm that Gary just sang about. Psalm 3:1, a psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. And then he says, O Lord, how many are my foes? Many are rising against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him in God. Selah. Selah, you remember, means stop and think about what you just read. So let's do that. Prior to this point in David's life, he had been extremely popular. Women wrote songs about David, sang songs about David. Men admired him. Men wanted to follow him. Men would lay their life down for him. He was the most popular person in the Hebrew culture and quite possibly the most popular person known in the whole known world at that point in time. So try to stop and think about somebody, whoever that person might be today, who you think is the most popular person on the face of the earth. I don't know who that person is in your mind. But whoever that person is, that's David at the time. He is the guy that everybody wants to be like, wants to be after. But at this point in time, something has changed. There's a new kid in town. And that new kid is his son, Absalom. Absalom has won the hearts of the people. For bad motives, yes. But Absalom has won the hearts of the people. And even as David was being chased out of the city at the time, you might remember there was a man named, I don't know how it's pronounced, I think it's Shimeah, who was throwing rocks at David. He was up on the hillside throwing rocks down on David as David was leaving and cursing David and saying what an evil man David was, making reference to the sin that David had had with Bathsheba and Uriah. So, this is what David's feeling. This is why he's writing this psalm. This is what he's going through at the time. He has gone from the heights of popularity to being cursed and despised by some peasant. Of his despair time, he writes in verse 3, but you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory, and the lifting of my head. What do we do with our children? What did we do when our children came to us? Maybe at school or a sporting event or something like that, and they come to us with their head drooping down. I've done it, literally grabbed the chin of one of my children and lifted their chin up and told them, everything's going to be okay. It's not that big a deal in the grand scheme of things. Yes, it hurts right now, but you'll get over it. Everything's going to be okay. David is saying, that's what the Lord did to me. He knew I was down. He grabbed my chin and he lifted it up. And he said, everything's going to be okay, David. Don't. From his holy hill. Selah. I lay down and slept. I woke again, for the Lord sustained me. You know, this psalm and the next psalm says a lot about going to sleep. And I love to go to sleep. When the evening comes, I am usually so tired that when I hit the bed, it just feels so good to just let all of your muscles just relax and realize that the day is over. And one of the nice things about it is that we get to be refreshed every 18 hours or so. Some of you don't sleep as much as I do. But after, say, an 18-hour period, I need to be refreshed. I need to let my body just rest. And that's the nice thing about going to sleep. Not only that, physically do we get refreshed, but when we wake up in the morning, we get a reset. It's a new day. No matter what happened the day before, we get to restart it. I had one particular day last week, actually, and I can't remember which day it was, but I remember telling Karen, this has been a horrible day. This has gone wrong, and this has gone wrong. And I remember some of it had to do with filing my taxes. I was so discouraged. But for some reason, the next day when I woke up, it was like the bad day had never happened, and it was a total reset. And it's just a blessing that God has allowed us to go to sleep every night and get a reset and start off fresh the next day. David says in verse 6, I will not be afraid of many thousands of people who have set themselves against me all around. He felt at that point in time, you can kind of picture him leaving the city, leaving in fear for his life, thinking that everybody had turned against him. Now, the truth is, everybody had not turned against him. Yes, there was a large group of people, the people who were in positions of power, who had felt like Absalom was going to be the next ruler, so they were putting their allegiance with Absalom, was against him. But not everybody. David felt like it was everybody. He says, I think many thousands of people have set themselves against me, all around me. But they weren't. We know this because when David did come back to power, he was welcomed back by the whole city. And even while he was gone, He had people who were so loyal to him that they would spy for him in the presence of Absalom and the government at the time, and it would cost them their life if they had been found out to be spies. And they're sending messages out to David. So David's thinking everybody's against him. They're not. The lesson for us is when we think everybody's against us, they're not. When we have our down days and we think, woe is me, we have friends that will not desert us, that love us, that care for us. Many in this church here are those kinds of friends. So what should we do in those times when we feel like David and we feel like the whole world is against us? We see it in the last two verses. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you strike all my enemies on the cheek. You break the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be on your people. Selah. Once again, think about it. Now, David was a poet, as we're seeing. But there was another thing, another side to David. He was an elite fighter. David was a man's man. If he were alive today, I would imagine that David would be in some elite force in the military. Whatever branch of the military there is, they all have these special elite forces. And David not only would have been in one of these forces, but he would be the leader of it. I'm convinced. Anybody that would take on a lion with nothing but a staff in your hand, and a bear, and Goliath, who was 9 feet tall, anybody that had that kind of courage was a special person. And that's the kind of person David was. But he says, hit him on the cheek, Lord. But wait a minute. What does Jesus say? Jesus says, turn the other cheek. So the Bible's telling us kind of two different things. Which thing should we follow? I won't take a poll here because it might be embarrassing. But what we have to remember is that what the Old Testament shows in physical terms is what the New Testament tells us to do in spiritual terms. In other words, when David says, God hit him on the cheek, we face a different kind of battle. Ours is a spiritual battle. In Ephesians, it tells us to put on the full armor of God. We talked about that a little bit earlier this morning. The full armor of God tells us how we are to fight and that it is a spiritual battle. David fought wars physically. We're to fight them spiritually. That's why Paul says we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the wickedness in high places. Therefore, if we are fighting against flesh and blood, as David suggests here, we're fighting the wrong battle. Because we must wage war not against people, but against Satan by pleading the blood of Jesus Christ and binding the work of the enemy. That's our job. Now, let's go on to Psalm 4. It's very similar to Psalm 3. It starts out by saying, to the choir master with stringed instruments. That's David's way of saying, hey, I want you to play this with a guitar. This is the kind of song that I want you to sing with a guitar. We don't have a guitar to sing it, but you'll just have to imagine it. A Psalm of David. Answer me when I call, O God, of my righteousness. You have given me relief when I was in distress. Be gracious to me and hear my prayer. Lord, he said, you've helped me before, and I'm asking you to help me again. I'm going to come back to that verse in a minute, but let me go on. O men, how long shall my honor be turned into shame? How long will you love vain words and seek after lies? Selah. But know that the Lord has set apart the godly for himself. The Lord hears when I call to him. Be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts and on your beds and be silent. There we have another reference to going to sleep. Are you distressed today? If you do what David said. Be in awe of God. As you lay in bed at night, be still. Let your last thoughts before you go to sleep be thoughts of God. As you try to commune with God just before you go to bed. I guarantee you that's better than any melatonin gummy that you can take if you're having trouble going to sleep. Verse 5, offer right sacrifices and put your trust in the Lord. What is the right sacrifice? Well, David was writing this at the time that sacrifices were taking place, but he still recognized that there is a right sacrifice and a wrong sacrifice. And Jesus, at one point when he was confronting the Pharisees, in Matthew chapter 9, he quoted an Old Testament verse, Hosea 6:6, and he says this to the Pharisees, "But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have come not to call the righteous, but sinners." That's Jesus quoting Hosea to the Pharisees. So one of the best ways to have peace in your heart when you're anxious is to stop thinking about yourself and show mercy to others. Pray for your friends. Pray for your enemies alike. This is being merciful. In the last couple verses in Psalm 4, there are many who say, "Who will show us some good? Who will show us some good? Lift up the light of your face upon us, O Lord. You have put more joy in my heart than they have when their grain and wine abound. In peace I will lie down. I will both lie down and sleep." Third time we see a reference to sleeping. "For you, O Lord, make me dwell in safety." This reminds me of another Bible verse where Jesus said, "What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul?" When you are right with the Lord, your sleep is very peaceful, and it's one of the most nicest things that you can have is peace with yourself, peace with God, and it's much more desirable than anything this world has to offer. That's kind of the way it ends up. Now, going back, I said I was going to go back to that first verse, Psalm 4. "Answer me when I cry, O God of my righteousness. You have given me relief when I was in distress." David remembered at that point what he had been through up to that point in time. And that memory of how God had delivered him from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear, from the sword of Goliath, from the many battles that he had faced up to that point in time, he stopped and remembered him in his time of distress. He remembered what God had done for him. And that's something that we need to do when we face a troubled time, is remember the times that God has been faithful. I thought of a time in my life where God had showed himself so real and so faithful to me. And I have shared parts of this story before. I'm not going to share the whole story. But some of you have not heard all of it or any of it. I'm going to share one little part just because it's a reminder of the faithfulness of God. I've told you before how I went through a period of time where it was about a year period of time where I lost my wallet. I think 7 different times. And I was so mad at myself for losing it over and over again. But the last time that I lost it was kind of a unique situation. I was mowing the yard and on a riding mower, and I made a turn and come around and looked in the yard, and there laying in the yard was my driver's license. And I looked around and I saw a couple of business cards laying in the yard, and I thought, uh-oh, I have run over my wallet with a lawnmower, and it has scattered, you know, everything out of the wallet. So I got out and I picked up what I could find, but really it was just the driver's license and a few cards. Everything else, nothing else I could find. The wallet I couldn't find. And I had called the kids out and offered them a reward to find it, and they were searching all over the place. Never could find it. Got up the next morning, went back out again, looked again, never could find it. And it was, you know, frustrating to me at the time. And I prayed, because this has happened six times earlier, and every time I returned it, I said, God, you know, you've been faithful to me. You have always returned my wallet. I'm asking you once again to return it. But I couldn't find it. And time went by. And at some point, you know, I had to get all new stuff that you carry around in your wallet. And I kind of forgot about it. And then about 3 months went by. And I remember sitting out on the front porch of our house. This is in Florida. And we had a swing, and I was sitting in the swing. And then it dawned on me that 3 months earlier, I had lost my wallet, and I never found it. And it was just me out there talking to the Lord, alone, just having a quiet conversation. But I was talking out loud, and I said to the Lord, I said, you know what? I thought we had a deal. You know, every time I would lose my wallet, you would bring it back to me. And this is from something that happened way back earlier when I was a kid, which I won't go into. And I said, Lord, I did my part. I lost the wallet. But you're not doing your part. You're not bringing it back to me. And I was praying this prayer sincerely, upset that God had not brought it back to me. And as I'm praying this prayer, a car pulls up into the driveway, a truck. And a guy gets out of the truck and yells at me on the front porch, are you Kurt Bomar? Yes, I am. Yeah, I got something for you. And he walks up and he hands me my wallet. And I said, how in the world did you get this? And he said, well, between your property and my property, there was about, 30, 40 acres of woods. And he said, earlier today, I was walking my dog in those woods over there, and my dog took off running through the woods, and he came back with your wallet in his mouth. I said, really? He said, yeah, and he handed it to me. Everything was still in the wallet. Now, it had been out in the weather for 3 months, and it would look, you know, I don't know, old. But everything was still in there. Money was in there, everything. So he handed me the wallet. And I said, well, you know, thank you. And off he went. And went back and sat on the front porch. And I pondered the magnificence, the faithfulness of God, that he would wait 3 months. If you think about the big scheme of things, he would wait 3 months for me to remind him that he had not returned the wallet. And even before I prayed the prayer, the dog picked up the wallet. The dog took the wallet to the man, and the man brought the wallet to me. All that happened before I even prayed. But God is in control. He's in control of everything, and he knows what he's doing, and he's going to show himself faithful. And he showed himself faithful to me at that time. Now, that was the last time that I lost that wallet. Of course, I retired that wallet because there wasn't much left of it. But it was, as I read this verse in Psalm 4, it reminded me of that situation. You have given me relief when I was in distress. Now, when I'm in distress, I think back on that time when God showed himself so faithful, showed me that he was in control, that he delivered to me what I asked for exactly at the right time. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to do it. And he will be faithful to you. I'm sure if you would all stop and remember and think of a way God has been faithful to you, something would come to mind to you. And that's what we have to dwell on when we're in a situation like David's in Psalm 3 and in Psalm 4, when he's in trouble and he doesn't know how things are going to turn out. What does he do? He remembers how God was faithful to him in the past. So, in review, Psalms 3 through 7 are written by David to us as words of encouragement that God will not fail us. He will protect us. But at the same time, we should leave the revenge business to him. It's not our job to be in the revenge business. David focuses on the most important requirement of having a good relationship with God. And it's not an outward requirement, which is represented by sacrifices, but it's an inward requirement, which is a pure heart. That's leaving the revenge to God and remembering what God has done for us. Now, next time, we'll finish up Psalms 3 through 7. And we're going to look at a little mystery. And I'll tell you what the mystery is now so you can be thinking about it for next time. We just came through the Easter season. What happened between the time that Jesus was crucified and died and the time that he was resurrected? Now, the Gospels don't tell us this. All it says is that he was buried in the circumstances around his burial. But it doesn't tell us what was going on during that period of time between the crucifixion and the resurrection. Psalms gives us some hints, and the Bible does tell us at different places. Psalms kind of pulls it all together. So what we're going to look at next week is that three-day period between the time Jesus died and the time he's resurrected. See what the Psalms has to say about it, about those events that took place. So that's what we'll be talking about next time. So you can, if you want to read ahead, we're going to read through Psalm 8 for next time. So let's close in prayer. Father, thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you for your faithfulness to me, showing yourself faithful, and I know that that same thought is in the hearts of everyone sharing this prayer with me, that you have been faithful to us. You have shown yourself faithful. And we know that when we do reach a time of trouble, a time of distress, a time of fear, a time of anxiety, you'll be there with us at that time. And we are to remember that you were faithful to us before and that you will be faithful to us again. Lord, it is our nature to want to take things into our own hand and to exact revenge on our enemies, to break their teeth, break their jaw. But you tell us in these Psalms, Lord, that really revenge is your business, not ours, that you are going to take care of things. There's going to come a time when you're going to right all the wrongs, and we're going to get to see that day. But in the meantime, we are to love our enemies and pray for them, and do good to them. Help us to remember this when it's so tempting to do otherwise. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay. We have a closing hymn. Number 112. Bud's going to lead us from his chair back there, I believe. Near to the heart of God. Let's all stand.
The air.